Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. Our guest this week is Jessica Taylor, a Senate race analyst for the Cook Political Report with Amy Walter. She dives into the probability of Democrats taking control of the Senate in November and what key races to watch. But first, here's this week's headlines. Net farm income is expected to decrease by nearly 7% this year to $140 billion in calendar year 2024. According to the most recent report released Thursday by the USDA Economic Research Service, net farm income would still be more than 15% above its 20-year average, despite the projected decline. Farm sector equity is expected to increase by over 5% from 2023 to more than $3.6 trillion in 2024. USDA data shows food insecurity in the United States is rising. 13.5% of households were food insecure in 2023. That's up from 12.8% in 2022, which means nearly 18 million households experienced food insecurity at some point during the year. Several groups had higher food insecurity in 2023 compared to 2022, including households without kids, households with more than one adult, and households in both metropolitan and suburban areas. A separate report from USDA on international food security projects that the number of hungry people in lower-income countries will actually drop this year, due in part to those falling commodity prices that are hurting U.S. farmers. USDA estimates that 313 million fewer people will be food insecure this year in 83 countries. That would be a 27.5% decrease from 2023. Election Day is just 2 months away, and a handful of races could decide what party controls the House and the Senate. Jessica Taylor is a Senate race analyst for the Cook Political Report with Amy Walter. We asked her which party she thinks will control the Senate next year.
Yeah, Republicans are still favored to win the Senate simply because they only need one seat and they have multiple pathways to that. Democrats have a 51-49 advantage, but they're defending 23 seats to just 11 for Republicans, including three seats that are in heavily Republican areas. We know that Republicans are going to pick up at least one seat. That's the open seat in West Virginia with Joe Manchin retiring. So if we put that in the Republicans column, which we've rated that race a solid Republican, then we're at 50-50. And if Trump wins, then they don't have to win any seats. You would have J.D. Vance as the vice president breaking a tie. But you have Montana with John Tester as an incredibly vulnerable seat, because this is a state that Trump won by 16 points last cycle. And, you know, we've seen in presidential cycles especially that the Senate and presidential results tend to go hand in hand. In 2016, every single Senate race went the same way as the presidential race. And in 2020, only Susan Collins of Maine managed to win re-election, even as Biden won her state. She outran Trump by 7 points, but that's much higher for Tester than he needs to outrun where Harris will likely be in the state.
And Jessica, let's dive into some of the closest Senate races. Trump won Montana by 16 percentage points in 2020. What do you think will happen in that race this year?
I think Tester has to disqualify his opponent. Tim Sheehy, former Navy SEAL, owns an aerial firefighting company. And they've tried to do that, sort of painting him as inauthentic Montana, someone that moved there, you know, not really from there. Tester's really sort of leaning into his Montana roots, that he's been there for generations, that he's a dirt farmer. They've tried to say that, you know, that Sheehy owns a dude ranch, not a real ranch. And that, you know, sort of the Yellowstoneification of Montana, of rich outsiders coming in and buying up all the land. But I think what Sheehy has going for him, that he has an R beside of his name. And, you know, there's been stories about, you know, things he's said about when he was shot and whether one injury happened when he was serving or whether it happened shooting in a national park. There were some comments that he came out with this week that were revealed that he made about some of the Native American tribes, and that could have some backlash. But John Tester could run a perfect race and still lose just simply because the numbers are against him.
We'll be right back with more from Jessica Taylor right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now instead of waiting for a new technology. We are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. Another Senate race, it's expected to be close, involves Senate Ag Committee member Sherrod Brown of Ohio. We asked Jessica Taylor, what's unique about that race?
This is one where we actually still see Brown with a slight lead. I think that will tighten, but he is running against a weaker challenger, I think, in Bernie Moreno, a former luxury car dealer. He's dabbled in crypto. And, you know, but I think Moreno was the weakest of the candidates that could have come out of that primary. I think he sort of ceded some ground to Brown, hasn't really spent a lot over the summer. I've heard some frustration among Republicans that he was sort of coasting a little bit. So I think Moreno needs to sort of solidify the Republican base behind him, but Brown needs to pick off those Republicans and independents. And right now, he's doing that to an extent. So I think it comes down to how much does Trump win the state by? If it's, you know, 6 points, 7 points, maybe Brown could outrun that. If Trump's winning it by, you know, 10 or 12, I think that becomes harder.
And do you think that, you know, J.D. Vance's being from Ohio, do you think that has any swing in that race at all?
I'm not sure it's playing much of an impact. Actually, when Vance ran and won 2 years ago in the Senate race, he actually ran a pretty poor campaign, actually, and underperformed really where Trump's number even was. And so I'm not sure that the running mate necessarily is making a difference there.
Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow is retiring and her Michigan seat is up for election. What are you watching in this race between former Republican Representative Mike Rogers and current Democratic Rep Alyssa Slotkin?
Yeah, this is one we do rate as a toss-up, and I think just because it's going to be very closely tied to the presidential election, because it is an open seat there, I think that, you know, while a long-tenured incumbent like Sherrod Brown or John Tester, and even, you know, in Wisconsin, like Tammy Baldwin, or in Pennsylvania, Bob Casey has the ability to sort of outrun the top of the ticket. Slotkin is not as well known. Now, she's won very competitive House seats in her Lansing area district, but I do think running statewide is a different story. She has the financial advantage right now, and I think that's probably giving her a slight edge, but it's still very much within the margin of error. And Mike Rogers still needs money and perhaps some outside super PAC help to help him. But I, you know, I think that this is one that's going to be, you know, if Trump wins the state, I think there's a good chance that Rogers could win the state. But I think if Harris wins, you could see Slotkin outperform her by a point or two, perhaps. So I think it's really just the fact that it's so close to the presidential level. I think the Senate race could very closely mirror that result there.
Lots of campaign resources have been poured into Wisconsin this year for the general election. How do you think that influences the Senate race there with incumbent Tammy Baldwin?
I think Michigan races are always just very close. It's probably the most closely divided 50-50 state that we have. And, you know, you look at just the two senators there, Republican Ron Johnson and Tammy Baldwin. There's not any more of an odd couple, I think, in the Senate, two polar opposites. But Baldwin is really sort of well known for her constituent services. You know, I've talked with even Republicans there in Wisconsin and on dairy issues and ag issues, you know, that she's very responsive. And I think that earns her some credibility. Eric Hovde, I think, has money and he's put in a lot of his own money, but the ads, Baldwin's ads, I think, have been particularly good at focusing on a lot of things that Eric Hovde has said that could be disqualifying, about single moms, about older people voting, about obese people paying more, about healthcare. And I think that's hurt him. So I think he has the ability to outrun where Harris is. I think it's just going to be a close race, but we still sort of give Baldwin the edge there. We rate that race as lean Democrat right now.
And the House includes many close races as well. What are the odds that Democrats can win control of that chamber?
I think the House is about 50-50 right now. I think before the switch at the top of the ticket, Republicans had a slight edge. Now, Democrats, when we look at our toss-up and toss-up columns for both Republicans and Democrats, Democrats still have to do have to win more of those seats. But, you know, it's a four-seat majority at this point. And I think it's about a coin flip right now.
Wonderful. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, Andrew Hunneke has more on the new net farm income forecast in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Net farm income is expected to decrease by nearly 7% this year, according to the most recent report released by the USDA Economic Research Service. This chart provided by USDA shows net farm income and net cash farm income from 2004 to the projected totals in 2024, adjusted for inflation. Net cash farm income is the yellow line. It's a measure of farmers' cash flow and includes cash receipts from farming, plus government payments, minus farm expenses. It's projected at slightly more than $154 billion in 2024, a decrease of more than $16 billion from last year. Net farm income is the blue line. It's a broader measure of profits that includes depreciation and accounts for changes in farm inventories. It's forecast at just over $140 billion in 2024, which would represent a drop of more than $10 billion from last year. Despite the drop, net farm income would still be more than 15% above the 20-year average. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. This week's panel discussion focuses on ag issues at play during the upcoming election. We're joined by Andrew Harker with the Russell Group and Ann McMillan from Invariant. Ann, let's start with you first. Both Harris and Trump added vice presidential candidates with rural backgrounds to their tickets. What do you think the biggest impact a Harris administration could have on agriculture?
Well, listen, I think if you compare a potential Harris administration to a potential second Trump administration, I mean, I think there's, there's a lot of risk in a second Trump administration. He did a lot of things in the first administration that were challenging for the agriculture industry, particularly with trade and the issues, you know, with China and, all of the, challenges that his decisions made on the American agriculture producers. So I don't see those types of major disruptions happening under a Harris administration, which I think is really, really important. I'm hopeful that the Harris-Walz administration takes a little bit more openness to trade agreements and look to possibly opening new markets for our agricultural producers, which is critically important, especially at this juncture where we're having a lot of the commodity markets needing with too much supply and not enough demand. So I'm hopeful that this will. A new Harris administration will break open some doors, create some new markets, and really, continue on the Biden successes of investing in rural America.
And Andrew, turning to you, President Trump has repeatedly called for raising tariffs on all imported goods and increasing tariffs even higher on goods from China. Are farm groups wrong to be concerned that this possibly could lead to another trade war?
You know, the ramp up in tariffs under President Trump obviously led to retaliatory tariffs on U.S. ag products that challenged growers. You know, much of that was offset by the market facilitation payments that were put in place, but certainly a reticence about a future trade war is not wrong. You know, I would expect, as President Trump has indicated, that if he is elected, there will be an aggressive approach on China that could include additional tariffs. I agree with Ann. Ag exports are critical to the farm economy, and whether tariffs remain the same or there's an escalation, it's important for us to focus on growing ag exports. And, you know, there have been calls for the administration to pursue new trade deals, but one key piece to seeing that happening is providing trade promotion authority to the president. And TPA expired in July 2021 under President Trump, and Congress has not restored that authority to President Biden. So, if we are going to really see new export markets develop for our ag products, Congress is going to have to provide the next president with trade promotion authority so they can cut new trade deals.
and transitioning to taxes, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expires at the end of 2025. What's at stake for agriculture in those expiring provisions?
So there are a number of permanent provisions from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that benefit ag stakeholders. And as you said, a number that are not permanent and are expiring the end of next year. One of those provisions is the business income deduction provision, or Section 199A, that allows individuals, estates, and trusts with pass-through business income to deduct up to 20% of their qualified business income when determining their taxable income. This is an area where we've already seen legislation introduced as a precursor to 2025. I think this is something that we're going to see the grower community push for. Again, another provision to look at is the estate tax. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act doubled the estate tax exemption to 11 million for individuals, 22 million for a couple. That's something that's expiring the end of next year. There's also another provision that has already begun to phase out, and that's the 100% bonus depreciation for qualified property. There was legislation that actually passed the House this year, bipartisan tax package, that would push that phase out a couple of years. That is not going to pass. It doesn't look like this year. So that will be another item that will be part of the 2025 tax debate. I will look for the ag sector to push for extending many of these provisions, potentially seek some permanence on some of these. The challenge will be the cost of extending these provisions. The estimates range from $4 to $5 trillion to extend the entire package. So we will have quite the debate next year.
We'll be right back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Biodiesel is clearly the lowest cost, fastest to market product. If we started to make a change to low blends to high blends today, we're going to impact clean air right now instead of waiting for a new technology. We are for innovation. So let's innovate. I don't know what's coming 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, but I know today our fuels can clean the air.
Welcome back. Tax policy is one of the few areas the Harris campaign has been clear about by indicating that the tax burden should be shifted to corporations and individuals who earn more than $400,000 annually. We asked Invariance and McMillan if those policies would hurt farmers.
The Harris campaign tax platform was, it was not intended to go after farmers or in any way, shape, or form. I think that is a pretty strong, like, consistent Democratic principle that those who can't afford to pay more on taxes should, and those who are amongst the most vulnerable Americans should not. And I agree with Andrew. This is like, this is going to be a really big debate next year. And I think this is, tax issues are one of these that has an extraordinary outsized implication from the election results. I do think that the Harris administration, especially with Vice President Walz, will need to be educated on the importance of some of these tax credits and tax deductions that are important for rural America. But she'll have to balance that with, an overall importance for the Democratic Party to ensure that the lowest income individuals, aren't paying an outsized share of revenue. So it's going to be difficult and messy. And, regardless if it's the Harris administration or not, I think the tax credits that are important to the farm community, we're going to be up against other tax credits that are important to other sectors of industry sectors in the American economy. And it's going to be really challenging because I just don't believe there's going to be enough money to go around to extend everything and make everyone happy. So it's going to be a dogfight, and the ag community is going to need to come prepared and smart and strategic.
And transitioning to climate, Harris has yet to detail her own climate proposals. How do you think a Harris administration could differ from what we've seen with the Biden administration's climate policy?
You know, actually, I think the Harris administration might look a lot similar to the Biden administration, which I think, you know, from my perspective, I think they've done a an interesting and good job with the ag community. I think the Partnership for Climate Smart Commodities were a huge success, at least in the sense of they had, you know, over $80 billion worth of applications for $4 billion pot of money to spend. So there's clearly interest in the agriculture industry to have, a partnership with the federal government to create opportunities for sustainability and climate change improvements in the supply chain.
And Andrew, Congress has 3 short weeks in session remaining before the November election. House Ag Chair D.T. Thompson is optimistic about farm bill movement. From your perspective, what can we expect from these next 3 weeks in session?
Yeah, well, I think you nailed it with just the limited schedule here. 3 weeks is not a lot of time to do much. Particularly when we have appropriations that are being dealt with. And so I think we're now looking and seeing Congress start talking about a continuing resolution to keep the government open. We'll see how long that goes. There are talks about including in that package at some point here an extension of the farm bill. I know, the question will be on, is that a short term or is that a 1-year extension? I don't think we are at the point yet of knowing the answer to that, but I do think conversations are starting to pivot about an extension. I think we heard on your program last week an acknowledgement that there is going to need to be an extension regardless of whether or not a bill can get done this year. There have been farm bills done during a lame duck. We've done 3 farm bills in the lame duck, including the 2018 farm bill. The difference between now and in all 3 of those situations was committee and floor action had happened in both chambers on all 3 of those bills. So we are not at that point this time around. So a lot of work to do. And as you said, very, very little time.
Wonderful. Thank you both for your perspective. And thanks for joining us today. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Andrew Hunneke has a closer look at the places around the world where the United States is exporting the most agricultural goods. In this week's Map It Out.
American agricultural exports are expected to fall to $169.5 billion for the fiscal year that starts October 1st. That drop of $4 billion is largely due to lower values for soybeans, corn, and other commodities. This map shows the top 10 areas across the world where the U.S. is exporting agricultural goods. According to USDA, the top 3 are Mexico, Canada, and China. Mexico and Canada are each expected to buy around $29 billion in U.S. ag products in fiscal year 2025. But sales to China are expected to fall to $24 billion, a drop of nearly $10 billion since fiscal year 2023. The European Union is 4th with $12.5 billion, and Colombia is 5th with slightly more than $4 billion. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for a busy upcoming week. Both chambers of Congress will be back in session. They'll be in session for 3 weeks before breaking for the November election. Vice President Kamala Harris will debate former President Donald Trump on Tuesday. A pair of House subcommittees will meet Wednesday to talk about food distribution shortages in older and tribal communities. Additionally, the Consumer Price Index is released Wednesday, and the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report will be released Thursday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.